Welcome to All Together Now. This is Eleanor Lacaine. There's a bold new idea that's starting to get some attention, a universal basic income. Our first guest today, Stephen Schafferman, wrote a book about universal basic income and is here to tell us about it. Following him, we'll talk about the issue that could help Democrats win this election, the Republican tax bill that gave a huge bonanza to the top 1%, that's blowing up the federal budget and being used to slash government programs that help working people. First up is Stephen Schafferman, author of The Basic Income Imperative. Stephen Schafferman has been writing and speaking about basic income for 30 years. He's a life member of the Basic Income Earth Network. He's also on the coordinating committee of the U.S. Basic Income Guarantee Network, as he has been for 16 years. His forthcoming book is titled, We the People Renewed, Peace, Justice, Liberty, Democracy, and Personal Dignity with Basic Income. Stephen Schafferman, welcome to All Together Now.
Thank you, Eleanor. Pleasure to be on with you.
Yeah, well, I've been looking forward to this conversation for quite a while. I'm so happy you're here. And I've read your prior book here, not the forthcoming one, but The Basic Income Imperative, and found it very stimulating. So this is a hot topic. I think people are going to be seeing it coming up more and more. So I'm glad we have an expert like you to help explain it to us here. So what is this idea of a universal basic income?
It's very simple, actually, and that's what makes it so powerful. The idea is that we would set some amount, maybe it's $1,000 a month, and give that to every adult citizen. So it's universal and unconditional. The homeless veterans in the street, the retired grandparents, you and me, and recent college or high school graduates. And because it's the same amount for everyone, it creates a baseline of equality and citizenship while empowering everyone to participate in our society.
Yeah, it's a very interesting idea. And some of the arguments I've seen in favor of it say that with this one single approach, we could wipe out poverty. Obviously, you'd have to have a high enough income for that, but you could at least eliminate extreme poverty. Why are you so excited about a universal basic income?
Well, ending extreme poverty is one thing, and this really is the only plan that can do that. And a lot of our progressive Democratic friends are talking about job guarantees or expanding the earned income tax credit or a few other things, which all have value. But if we really want to end extreme poverty, end hunger, end homelessness, we have to find a way to provide an income for the poorest of the poor. And this is the one plan that would do that. And more importantly, from my perspective, it empowers everyone to be active citizens in solving the many other problems that are plaguing our society.
So you're thinking that if we had a basic income, then people would have the economic freedom and the time to be able to participate more in our civic life? Is that it?
Absolutely. The time and the freedom to participate, and also the incentive to participate, because people will want to be sure that we continue to get the basic income, and people will want to be sure that our government is using its funds wisely, and people will want to be sure that cutting other programs, welfare, corporate welfare, waste in the military, and so on, is done responsibly so that poor folks are not harmed. And many other benefits.
All right. So this is one of the strong arguments I've heard in favor of this universal income, that what you could do is take all these kind of patchwork of programs we've got now for food stamps, for housing, you know, various forms of welfare, that you could actually, instead of run the programs, which have a lot of overhead, just give the money directly to people, and then you save really billions of dollars on program overhead and administrative costs. Is that
exactly
how you see it working?
Yes, absolutely. And people have been making exactly that argument for decades. And most folks don't know, but guaranteed income was a mainstream idea in the 1960s, supported by moderate Democrats and moderate Republicans. And even then, the idea was that a lot of the funding would come from cutting and simplifying programs that become superfluous.
Right, exactly. Well, wasn't it President Richard Nixon was going to be doing something like this, but then it got stopped because the Democrats thought, well, that's not enough money, so we're not going to do that. Am I remembering right?
You are indeed. It was one of those stories. The Family Assistance Plan proposed by Richard Nixon actually passed in the House with 2/3 of the vote.
Wow.
It was blocked in the Senate because the extreme liberals thought the specifics were too stingy and the extreme conservatives didn't want to do anything to help the poor.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So, yeah, but Nixon was not a huge supporter of it. He was just a political pragmatist who saw that this was an idea that might have a lot of leverage. And so he proposed it, and he actually made a very strong televised address when he announced it. But politics then and now is often paralyzing and always makes it easier to stop new ideas than to implement them.
Yeah, it's always an uphill battle to change, make some kind of change. So
yeah, that's one of the reasons I'm such a strong proponent of basic income. Because if you try to change just one small part of this hugely complicated, interrelated political system, lots of special interests and just status quo forces mobilize against the change. But basic income, in my view, can really be the key to a peaceful democratic revolution that transforms our society to fulfill the ideals of America's founders.
Right. Okay. Well, that makes sense. I admire your persistence. You've been at this idea and developing it for decades now. And, you know, I can see how your thinking has evolved and developed over time. So you're really getting to the point where you've got a very serious proposal to put forward here. And I love the aspect of it where you can say that all people deserve a basic income as a matter of human dignity.
Yes.
So that all people will be able to meet their basic needs like food, shelter, and medicine. And in spite of all the programs, we still got 12% poverty rate in the country, and millions of people still seem to struggle with the basics.
Yeah, and those programs, as you've already suggested, are very complex and overlapping and bureaucratic. Basic income is simple and would require minimal bureaucracy and therefore has great appeal not just to our liberal and progressive friends, but also to a lot of conservatives and libertarians.
Yeah, very interesting. Well, who is behind this idea? I mean, you've talked about the Basic Income Guarantee Network and also the international gatherings you've been at. Who is pushing this idea?
Well, most of the early support for it here in the U.S. and around the world was from economists and political scientists and sociologists. But what's very exciting right now is it's starting to get mainstream attention from some pretty serious political actors. In the last year, Barack Obama has favorably mentioned it. Hillary Clinton has favorably mentioned it. I was at the Netroots Nation gathering of progressives, and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez was one of the keynote speakers, and it's part of her stump speech.
Hmm. Wow, I didn't know that. That's really interesting. Well, I do know that it's a kind of an idea that cuts through a lot of the tired old paralysis of left versus right, that there is support, as you say, left, center, and middle. I think we've got, some of the union people have been behind it. I think Andy Stern in the labor movement has come out for it. And then on the other side, we've got Charles Murray of the American Enterprise Institute. So, it's certainly got a broad appeal, if not yet very deep. So it seems like the kind of idea that could really appeal across the board, which heaven knows we certainly need something to bring Americans together.
Yes, we do. And that's why the book that I'm currently completing is titled We the People Renewed, because at some time, hopefully soon, there will be a major political change, and America politically today is just so polarized and paralyzed. I mean, a lot of people have been using the word tribal to describe the Republican and Democratic parties and the Donald Trump and anti-Trump factions. And basic income is an idea that will empower people everywhere, and especially the very poor and the people in rural areas who have been so neglected for decades.
Yeah. So has this idea, I mean, you mentioned it's been around a while, and in your book you refer to some very long-standing references to this concept. Is it being tried? Is there a country that's doing it? Is there a state or a city that's been doing it? Do we have any real-life examples and models we can talk about and learn from?
The most long-standing and successful model is Alaska.
Mm-hmm. From the oil money?
The oil money. Alaska has the permanent fund dividend, and since 1982, every Alaska resident has received a yearly check, usually $1,000 to $2,000 from oil royalties, and it's called the permanent fund dividend. Permanent because a portion of oil royalties goes into a large investment fund, and the dividend is paid out every year. And with all the talk in recent years about income inequality, Alaska is the state with the lowest income inequality, and that's largely, if not entirely, thanks to the permanent fund dividend, and that every poor Alaskan and every not poor Alaskan gets a yearly check. There have been pilot projects in a number of places in the U.S. and around the world, starting back in the 60s and 70s. More recently, a privately funded pilot in Oakland, larger pilot about to get started in Stockton, California, several projects in Canada. There's talk currently about possibly a project in Chicago and in rural Mississippi. These are all privately funded. There have been government-funded projects in Finland and several other European countries. Canada, I mentioned. So, growing attention everywhere. There was a national referendum about it in Switzerland, and even though it lost, it generated tremendous interest, and the organizers knew it was going to lose on the first round because that's the way Swiss democracy operates.
Well, that's the way most democracies operate.
Yeah.
I remember, people who put forward the bills to to have the sanctions against South Africa introduced that year after year. It took like 19 years to get that passed. So you got to start somewhere.
South Africa is actually a country where there's been quite an active movement for a basic income. It's been endorsed by Desmond Tutu and other prominent figures, by leading church groups and labor unions.
Interesting. Well, now you mentioned in Alaska that Alaska's got the lowest income inequality, and you think it's largely due to this dividend. But really, if you look at $1,000 to $2,000 a year for everybody, but compare that, our top three wealthiest people in America have like something like $100 billion. So that's really not going to bring us too far towards.
No, it's a small amount. And the fact that their income inequality is the lowest shows that even a small amount can make a significant difference. You mentioned some of the super wealthy here in the U.S., and several of them are proponents of basic income. Elon Musk and Mark Zuckerberg have publicly endorsed it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think what it can do is lift the floor, so you're not having people like completely destitute and unable
exactly.
to eat.
Yes, it creates.
We still would have a long way to go for income and wealth equality, though.
Well, and one of the things that I talk about is that if we start with a tax-free basic income, you can then radically simplify the tax code and tax it back from the millionaires and the billionaires. So they would be paying a much higher rate than today. They'd lose all the loopholes and exemptions and privileges that are currently embedded in the tax code. And in that way, it also helps to promote a real sense of equality and equal citizenship and equal justice.
Yeah, so let's talk now about some of the objections and concerns to the basic income idea. So right off the bat, what everyone I'm sure is asking is, how would you pay for it? Because you're talking very expensive. So say if you gave $5,000 a year to the 250 million adults in the United States, you're talking about $1.25 trillion price tag every year, and people are going to resist any new taxes, particularly to pay for some other people to not work. So where do you see the money come to pay for it?
Actually, economists have run the numbers, and it's very easy to pay for it. And first, it eliminates a lot of current programs. And I always emphasize that when we're cutting welfare and food stamps and housing assistance and such, we want to be sure that the cuts are careful and do no harm. Also, it eliminates the rationale for all the corporate welfare. And we've seen this national debate about Amazon's new headquarters and states competing to give Amazon billions of dollars. Huge amounts of money go to subsidizing big employers for the goal of creating jobs and stimulating economic growth. And with the basic income, we're giving that money to regular folks so that people will demand goods and services and will have demand-driven economic growth. You mentioned in your introduction that the next half hour we'll be talking about the Republican tax scam, and that's a word that I hear used often, the tax scam for the rich. Well, one of the ways we pay for the basic income is by rolling back all of those absurd benefits that are going to the wealthiest among us. And there, too, and the rationale for the Republican tax cuts last year and the ones they're again talking about was to create jobs and stimulate economic growth. Well, vastly more efficient to distribute the money to regular folks who will spend it and demand real growth that serves real people.
Right. Well, let's talk a little bit about that. You know, it sounds great. We know the money's there. If we could close these loopholes for the very wealthy, but we've got this $2 trillion tax cut just came in in December of last year, as you say, the Republican tax scam bill, we're going pell-mell in the opposite direction of what you're saying. So, but it's very hard to stop. You know, we live here in Washington, D.C., and we see the influence of the special interests of the very wealthy, so they kind of pass what they want. I'd be concerned about, even if we could get some kind of basic income going, that we, in the end of the day, the very rich are not going to give up their loopholes and benefits that bring them many billions of dollars every year.
Well, they may not give it up easily, but that's one of the points that I always emphasize. This is still, in theory at least, a democracy. And I know of no better way to attract and entice people to be active citizens than to offer them $1,000 a month or $500 a month. I think there are huge tens of millions of dollars, tens of millions of voters who will rush to the polls when they know that it's going to put money in their pockets, and who will demand that the super rich pay their share for once.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. And as you know, if we stayed at the level of 500 a month or 1,000 a month, that's probably not enough for most people to just kind of say, well, that's so much money, I don't have to work. But as you go up and increase those amounts, I've heard the concern about having this guaranteed income would encourage laziness. And why would people work when they can get paid for not working? What do you say to people who say, well, this is just going to reward people for not doing anything?
Well, it's actually one of the questions that researchers set out to study in the 1960s, when our government funded a series of income maintenance experiments around the country. And all of the evidence from those studies and from other studies and the recent privately funded pilot projects, all of the evidence is that people want to work. People want to do meaningful things with their lives. Yes, there will be some who choose to work fewer hours, but that would actually be good for society because most of us are overworked. And it would be hugely beneficial for parents and kids and our society as a whole if people can afford to stay home with and take care of their kids instead of putting them into daycare. And hugely beneficial if workers have more choice about their jobs because they have an independent income and can tell abusive employers that they're not going to put in double overtime shifts without adequate compensation. And again, my emphasis fundamentally is on how this will lead us towards something more like a true democracy.
Mm-hmm. And we have right now a universal income program. It's called Social Security. So everybody who's 62 years old or 63, depending on when you were born, will get some kind of a check from the government. It's not uniform. It is based on what you've paid in from working over the years, but it is a universal. Even if you're a multimillionaire, you get your Social Security check every month. So have you or somebody looked into how we could do a variation where we have basically Social Security for everyone?
That's one of the ways some of us talk about basic income, is Social Security for all.
Mm-hmm.
And it's more social and more secure because it's for everyone. In fact, most people don't know the history of Social Security. It was introduced in 1935 during the depths of the Great Depression and largely in response to two mass movements calling for a true guaranteed income.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, there was the Townsend Plan movement calling for a guaranteed income for seniors, $200 a month. And also Share Our Wealth, which was calling for an even larger guaranteed income for everyone. And it was the political pressure for guaranteed income that generated the demands for what became Social Security.
I had no idea. That's fascinating. Is there a good article or book that kind of maps out that history?
Yeah. Well, I talk about that a little bit in my books.
Mm-hmm.
And, in fact, if you go to the Social Security Administration website, there's a section on the history that talks about that. When I first was doing research for a book that I published in 98, the Social Security website actually had the PDF copy of Dr. Francis Townsend's original booklet was up there, but that's been removed, I believe. So any history of Social Security will mention Share Our Wealth and the Townsend Plan. And again, one of the ways to think about basic income is that it is Social Security for all. And in my version, the basic income is truly universal, so you would get it starting probably at age 18, though some people would like it to be 16 and others 21, and right up until the end of life. There are a few people talking about it who say just up until the age when people start to collect Social Security, but I want to give it to everyone because the Social Security today is clearly not an adequate safety net. And I think with a true basic income for everyone, seniors will have that basic income plus Social Security and will have a greater bond between seniors and their kids and their grandkids and society as a whole, which will enable us to reform Social Security in a way that is workable for people today and in coming decades.
Yeah, well, Social Security has been one of the most successful programs ever.
Absolutely.
Invented by the government here. And the fact that it is universal means everybody's backing it because everyone's got a stake in it. So that concept, and it has really worked to bring down poverty.
Yeah.
Among seniors. So,
not so much in the last few decades because poverty among seniors has been rising and a lot of people have lost their secondary pensions or primary pensions when companies went bankrupt. And but Social Security is also an example of the power of making the basic income universal and unconditional, because
mm-hmm.
the mass political support for Social Security comes from its universality and the fact that it's remarkably efficient, and the overhead is just, I think it's just 1 or 2%.
Right. So we could possibly think about using the government agency of Social Security to expand the universal program. Is that what you're thinking?
That's,
or were you thinking start a new bureaucracy?
No, that's definitely one way of doing it, and there are many others. It could begin with just expanding the earned income tax credit and making it fully refundable.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of people today talking about carbon tax and dividend as the best solution for climate change and global warming. And basic income, in effect, is the dividend. So we would partly fund it through responsible carbon taxes, fossil fuel taxes. And there's a lot more that we can discuss about how this can happen and why it's so important. And
that's great. And how do our listeners learn more? Do you have a website to send them to?
I'm getting ready to put up a new website, but people can go to the international group is basicincome.org. That's the Basic Income Earth Network. And there are a number of Facebook pages about basic income. There's also someone who's already announced that he's running for the Democratic presidential nomination in 2020 on a basic income platform, and that's Andrew Yang, and his website is yang2020.com, yang2020.com. So
that's great.
People just begin to search around online and on Facebook. They'll find lots of information, and
Yeah. Well, that's all the time we have for today. I hope to have you back and discuss it more. Stephen Schofferman, thank you so much for being on All Together Now and your bold, fresh thinking for America.
It's been a pleasure. I look forward to continuing the conversation, Eleanor.